Hello, everyone. Welcome to Awaken Your Soul's Journey, the podcast that explores the transformative power of grief. I'm your host, Angela Clement, and I'm here to guide you on a profound journey of healing and self-discovery. Each episode, you will be introduced to experts, authors, and individuals who have experienced grief firsthand to share their stories, insights, and wisdom. Together, we will explore many facets of grief and shed light where there is darkness. Throughout this podcast, we will explore different tools and techniques that can support you in your healing process, from mindfulness and meditation to creative expression and spiritual practices. We will provide you with a diverse range of resources to help you navigate your grief. Whether you have experienced a tremendous loss or simply want to gain a deeper understanding so you can support someone else, this podcast is for you. So if you're ready to embark on this awakening journey with us, make sure to subscribe. Together, let's explore, learn, find healing, and embrace the transformation that awaits us. Welcome and thank you for being here today. I am so excited to introduce my guest. His name is Joshua Black, and he is a grief and bereavement researcher, speaker, and host of the Grief Dreams podcast. You ought to check that out. Most of his published work has focused on dreams and continuing bonds after loss, including prenatal and pet loss. As one of the leading academic experts in grief dreams, which can be dreams of the deceased, Dr. Black has directed his efforts on raising awareness about his fascinating phenomenon through media interviews, in addition to speaking engagements and workshops. In addition to his website, griefdreams.ca, you can find him active on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Grief Dreams. And Dr. Black currently works as the Bereavement Initiative Manager for the BC Center for Palliative Care, where he is leading bereavement-related research. His long-term research goals are to continue to serve and raise awareness for those who are bereaved, who are not being provided the necessary grief support. So there's your introduction. Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm always grateful for anyone who wants to talk about grief dreams, because it is something that a lot of people just don't know a lot about.
Yeah, exactly. I was so shocked to find a podcast about it, and then found out you were a researcher, which is just amazing. So I'm curious, like, how did you get into this work? What made you decide to do this?
I think with a lot of us, it comes from personal experience. Like, I never wanted to be a researcher, and I never wanted to focus or look at grief and bereavement at all. But when I was in my undergrad, I was trying to be an elementary school teacher. Like, that was my goals and my hopes and dreams. And then what happened was my father died when I was about a year about to being finished. And that really changed everything within me. In the sense, it was the first time I had to sit with grief in general when it comes to his death, and that was its own struggle that I learned a lot about. And then dreams actually helped me through that process, and so I could actually just share it. So when as a guy in the Western culture, I never wanted to sort of feel those emotions. I think a lot of us have a hard time feeling sadness and the depths of sorrow. So after he died, I cried a lot, and then when I had to get back to school, I kind of, wanted to just suppress it. Like, I didn't want to feel that anymore, because I wanted to go back to work. I wanted to go back to school. And what happened was I was able to do that, but something changed within me when I stopped crying, and I was able to still get good grades, but like the world changed. It's almost like the color came out of it, and you're walking in this almost like gray and white world where you're not feeling joy anymore. And there's like that motivation. It's just like, do what you're supposed to do. And so everyone around me thought I was doing okay, because I was doing the things one was supposed to do. But yet inside, there was something not right. And I just thought, oh, this is grief. I didn't really think too much of it. I just kept going. And then I had a dream of my father where I got to say goodbye. He died very suddenly. And then I got to tell him that I loved him. And in those moments, it was just like this amount of peace and the vividness of the dream. It was something I've never experienced before. And then when I woke up, what was amazing was the color was back into my life. And so I could regulate my emotions again in that way. I could feel this joy, but I also could feel some sadness. But like, I remember sitting at the edge of my bed thinking, like, what was that? Because it wasn't my interpretation that changed me. You know, like, wasn't I had the dream, I interpreted it, and then I felt a certain way. It was the dream itself changed me. And I was sitting at the end of the bed, like, what was that and what just happened? And so I always sort of like held that close to me. I didn't tell too many people. And then when I finished school, I didn't decide not to be an elementary school teacher anymore. There's something that didn't feel right. And so I started volunteering with the bereaved. And this is where like life gives you like hints along the way, you know, like on different paths, maybe you should go choose. And so when I was helping the bereaved, they're talking about their dreams. And for me, I only had very positive ones at that time. And so they're having negative ones. Some of them weren't having dreams and they wanted to know why. And so when I went to the literature, there wasn't really anything for them that I could really give them to give them understanding on these types of dreams. And for me, it sparked an interest in those because I had ones that were very significant in my life. And so after gaining the courage to see, could I even be a researcher? I was able to, you know, it took some time. It took about a year for me to actually believe that I could. And then finding a supervisor or place that would accept me was the other challenge, like in your mind. And just the way everything worked, I was able to find someone who was interested in this topic, even though they didn't do anything in this topic themselves, and not many people have. So like you're really trying to get a supervisor that's willing to try something new, which is usually you're trying to do something that they do. But, and so I was just really, you know, really happy that I was able to do my MA in psychology, then my PhD in psychology, looking at this topic to really provide answers for those people who had questions when I was first part of the hospice setting. And from there on, I learned so much that I didn't know going in. And now it's really about raising awareness. And so that's a little like snapshot on like really how I got here. And it was life pushing you in some way with my own personal experience, but it's also the kindness and the of the supervisors I had to even want to study this topic, even though they haven't did it themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an amazing story, how you got into that. And I think it's great that you have. And I wanted to share with you kind of as this next question. I had a dream about Blaine after he passed. And, you know, some of them were, well, I had several, but some of them were kind of negative. But one in particular was very positive. And we were driving in a car. And in front of us, there was this very, very colorful rainbow. It was very, very vivid. And I've never seen colors like that since. And I don't know if I'll ever see them again. Like, it was amazingly colorful. So I'm curious, like, you know, some of those dreams, I mean, there weren't too many that were negative, but some of them were. So what's the difference between having this negative dream and having the really positive, beautiful dream?
Well, probably your reaction to it, I guess, would be the biggest difference. But I think it's just understanding maybe what the functions of these dreams may be. And that was like one of the things I went to do the PhD for, was to try to understand what is going on here and how is it impacting our grief. And so, yes, we can have a little bit about just the Western approach to dream research is that dreams represent our waking life for the most part. And so when we're happy and we're loving life, we can have more positive dreams. And when we're more sad and depressed, we're going to have more negative dreams. And so after someone dies and you're grieving, you should have more negative dreams. And so that was sort of our theory going in that, you know, even though I had a positive dream, most people are probably having negative experiences with the deceased. And so what we found though was the opposite, more people are having these positive dreams. And so what you can say about those negative dreams, since you've asked, is that they're probably a reflection of what one is working through in their waking life when it comes to the grief. So a lot of the negative dreams that I've seen definitely reflect unresolved feelings of guilt, anger, blame for that. Also trauma that people have gone through, especially after like a suicide or something like that. And you see that even after like pet loss or after a miscarriage, you see these sort of traumatic sort of responses that can happen. And so that can filter into your dreams as you're trying to process and work through it. And then you can have sort of those positive dreams. It's interesting how there's just more of them. Like people are experiencing those more often when the deceased is present. I think that's a huge unique quality of these dreams. And I think it's why so many people, I think, want to talk about them or even want them. Because when people do share about them, they tend to be different than just like a regular dream. As you sort of said, like you had this vividness, you had this rainbow. And like mine with my father, it was totally different than anything I've experienced. It felt like I was there and I felt like there's this peace in the imagery. It wasn't really the storyline. It was just like us together and we're just there. And I got to express and we got to sort of share a moment together. But it felt different. It felt as if it was real life, but almost more than real life. It was a very interesting feeling. And a lot of people sort of share that across cultures, that these dreams just feel different when you're in them. And so with that, you know, there's a lot of things you could say about continuing bonds that can help. It can help facilitate, you know, our grieving process in many ways. Like for me, I got to say goodbye, which was definitely a block. I didn't get a chance to say that. Also, that I loved my father, which, you know, last time I said that, I was probably like 6 or 7, right? Like, and he didn't say it to me. Like, so it was like, it was just like that culture we're in. But it's something I felt. And I didn't know how important that was for me to say. If I'm saying it in a dream, it must have been important in waking life that I wish I would have said it more often. And also, I think just love in general from the imagery that a lot of these comforting dreams, if people with the deceased, there's this love that's present. And I think there's something to that in the sense of helping us through a lot, a very difficult time in our life and the power of love within our lives. So I think there's a lot of things we can sort of look at. Also, emotion regulation, as is sort of what happened with me. But also, some of these negative dreams too can also help with, I think, facilitating trauma recovery. That's one of the theories. So if the dream is different in the sense of how the person died than what they really died at, it could be a way the mind is trying to integrate the trauma while you're sleeping. Because when you're sleeping, your mind's still active and still problem solving, still trying to like help you. And so it's not like just shutting off a computer. There's a lot going on, and these dreams are just like a glimpse and a window into what's actually going on, and maybe what's actually helping you become a little bit more resilient throughout this time. Because we don't know what's going on, but we people always say, "Oh, they're so resilient," but they could have had a dream, right? Like what happened with me, it changed the whole story. So we don't really know exactly all the dreams that we're actually dreaming. And so I've always been curious that if people are having dreams that they're not remembering, is it still having the same kind of impact as the ones that we remember?
Yeah, that's a fascinating question. Because yes, I'm sure that most of the dreams we don't remember.
It's true. I think the average just dreams in general is like 2 to 3 a week, and about 10% of the population doesn't really remember their dreams. So, yeah, but you can get better at it though, which is a very interesting part about dreams, is just by valuing them, sharing your dreams, and like writing them down, you actually can increase your dream recall. And so that's its own fascinating thing because our culture doesn't really value dreams in general. And when it comes to these dreams of this deceased, I think more people value those. So it's a really good starting point, I think, for the culture to start valuing dreams, because so many people value those types of dreams, especially when they're positive.
And when I was looking on your website, I seen something about dream rescripting. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so one of the common things when we have no nightmares, for people who have nightmares, is that they don't know what to do. And when you don't know what to do, you tend to be afraid of those dreams. And then you can also then start to restrict your sleep. And I hear that a lot when it comes to someone who's bereaved. And the issue is when you start restricting your sleep, well, you're not going to be able to cognitively function. Your immune system's going to crash. Your emotion's going to be more negative. And so you have all these difficult problems that are going to be going on top of whatever you're also trying to deal with, which is that grief. So it's really great to be able to not be afraid of these dreams when they happen and try to understand them. And so it's great to understand them, but sometimes it takes a long time to sort of process that trauma or whatever we're trying to work through. And so you can actually, you know, you can work on your emotions in waking life, which can help sort of that dream content, but you can also go the opposite way around where you can work on your dreams, and that's going to actually help your grief or your trauma. And so it can work both ways. And so what's interesting is when one of the ways to work with your dreams is called dream rescripting, especially if it's negative. And so what you do there is when the person has, it could be, it works with children or adults, research has shown. And so what you do is you really just rescript the ending of the dream to make it something more positive, or you sort of, you can add characters into the dream that change the content of like giving you a helper so you don't, you know, fall fate to whatever disaster that's going on. And so with that, then you, with this new positive dream in your mind, what you do is you rehearse that. And so it gives you kind of this control, and you don't avoid the dream anymore, you're going towards it. And that actually has shown to reduce the distress if you ever have that kind of dream again, but also shows to eliminate these dreams, especially if they're repetitive, which a lot of these dreams can be in nature. And so an example of that, let's say, you know, just any dream. So let's say a bear or someone's chasing you. You don't know who, common dream, right? You're just running away. And so you wake up. And so a common sort of tactic is you could turn around and realize, oh, it's actually my deceased father. He just wants to sort of share some news that he has with me and how much he loves me and how he's watching what I've been doing. He's proud of me. And then that's the dream. So that's what you sort of rehearse for like for the next couple of days. But that changes it. So now it's not just you're just panicking and running away. It's like, no, you have this other ending that's very positive that can really help facilitate what you're trying to move, is to be able to integrate that loss into your life.
Interesting. So do you help people work through this rescripting?
I do when I can, right? Like, so yeah. A lot of my work is on increasing knowledge in the area, but I will help people with it, because I've seen so many dreams. And it's just like, you just have this knowledge set on understanding some of the patterns that are going on and maybe some of the things that they're working through when it comes to their own grief, that sometimes they know, sometimes they don't know. And I think that's the beauty of dreams, where it can really shed light on some things that we might not know that we're processing still. Like, we might think we're feeling okay, but yet there's still this thing that we're not acknowledging. And the mind's really great at that. And that's why dreams are such a really great way to sort of see maybe what are we processing and not looking at in waking life. And so, yeah, so people email me, I'll do that. I also do one-on-one sessions with people just to help them out. Because it's a hard task, especially online, to try to find someone reputable to at least just sit with you and provide you some knowledge on it.
Wonderful. Yeah. So another piece I know with people in grief, and I know it happened a lot for myself, is sometimes you wake up in the night and then you just can't get back to sleep. And I had seen on your website, there were actually some really good suggestions about what you could do.
Yeah. So you're talking like more like the, like insomnia a lot of times.
Yeah.
It's really big when it comes to grief and bereavement. And so a lot of times it's to really get out of bed. It's like, if you can't get back to bed and you realize you can't sort of fall asleep, get up, get out and do something kind of boring. So it could be like, you know, reading or just meditating or something until your body sort of feels like it's ready to go back to sleep again. But this is sort of a hard part when it comes to grief and bereavement. When you have so much stress in your life, it affects your sleep. And so you want to keep a good routine. There's a lot of things you don't want to do. So to help you be able to fall asleep. So you don't want to be watching, you know, a movie or looking at Facebook or Instagram while you're in bed. You know, do that stuff outside your room and really try to make space for your room to be the place where you sleep. And I know a lot of times that's where we put our TVs and that's where we do some of our thinking, but that actually is, you know, reduces the association between sleep and the bedroom. And so, you know, those are just things, there's other things I said on my website that you can look at. But also some people, it's just falling asleep in those bedtime routines is very difficult, especially if that person or animal lived in the home. And because you almost feel like the busyness of the day is gone and then you're left with this emptiness around you, especially if you had like a child and like you're ready to usually tuck them in or see them, you're going to get these really pangs of grief at those moments. And so I know some people have spoke about sleeping in a different room altogether because the room is too associated with the deceased in some way. So there are different things you can do, but also you can contact your physician if it, you know, it really gets out of hand to sort of help you with that. But it's so, like, people don't understand how important sleep is just in the process of living. And so I think it's really important to really look at what our sleeping patterns are and can we improve those?
Yeah. And what is the reason why you get up? Because I've always tried to just stay in bed until I go back to sleep. But what is the reason you get up?
Because you'll ruminate while you're there, and that causes more stress, right?
Okay.
So if you're there and you're like, I can't get back to bed, I can't get back, why can't I sleep? What you're doing is you're producing more and more stress within your body, which eliminates your ability to go to bed. So get up, right? Like just get out of bed. If you try for like 5 minutes, if you can't, you're like, okay, I'm just gonna get up. And then you just keep the lights down low because you don't want to wake your body up. And you just want to get out. And if it's meditating, the thing, that's an easy one. And it'll just calm your mind down again. And then you'll be able to get back. But it's that rumination and that almost need and that want to go to bed and you can't, and that frustration will actually keep you up.
That's good to know. That's a new one for me anyway. Yeah, and you know, we can always use tips on that because I think, you know, like you say, getting sleep is super important. You just can't make it through the day when you're tired. It's on top of grief. It's just not good. So, you also have on your website, you have something called a Dream Builder worksheet. And it seems like just from the little bit of reading I had, it was like for people who didn't have a dream about their loved one. Can you explain a little bit more about the purpose of that?
Yeah, so I guess it goes back to some of the research we did when we looked at why are some people having dreams and other people aren't. And so when we looked at that, we looked at different personality factors, we looked at grief and a bunch of other stuff, spirituality. And what we found was that dream recall in general on both studies related to dreaming of the deceased. So it seems that people who remember more of their dreams are the ones that are remembering more of their dreams with the deceased in it, which makes sense. But a lot of people were like putting negative connotations on why they weren't having dreams. Like, oh, maybe they don't love me anymore if they're spiritual, or maybe they didn't cross over, or maybe they're just jet like, or they just get jealous of other people. And so we really want to sort of see if there's like some type of understanding we can give them. So that was part of it. And the other part is like, now what? Now what do we do with that? And so when I started talking to more people to further the conversation on dreams, I would ask them, well, what dream would you want to have if you could? Right. Like, so rather than just like ending the conversations, like, how can we facilitate more conversations on something that it seems to be important to you? And that's where that kind of like stemmed from. And then when I was helping build a bereavement program for a group, I remember different people saying that they didn't want to talk about it because not everyone has a dream. And so I was like, oh, like, what is an exercise that we could actually use that everyone could be a part of? Because not everyone's going to have a positive dream and not everyone's going to have a dream in general. And so I decided, like, why not build this worksheet to allow people to be able to talk about it together? And I didn't know, you sort of do what you do and then you sort of see how it turns out. And it's been very beautiful to sort of see and the power of just writing down a dream you want, the amount of emotions that can come out of people and the memories that it triggers within the mind is very fascinating because we have people who are like leading the group were becoming very emotional. Just writing it down and sharing. And so I thought that was very fascinating that it just connecting, it's just another tool that we can use to facilitate a different conversation on grief and loss. And so, yeah, so you can do it through a group, but you can also do it one-on-one. I've done that with different clients where they've done it and then you put them through a meditation or they can paint the image, whatever their creative spirit is, and what dream they'd want to have. I think the only downside is people who are get so stuck and like this dream has to be perfect and like no you can make a new one tomorrow, like this isn't like the only dream, right? So it's just like it just allows you to just relax and tonight if I could like what would I want to have, and you could be able to talk about that. And what's beautiful is when people do create a dream, just like when they create a dream at night, just spontaneously, you can ask questions on the imagery, like, so why are you wearing that, or what does that mean, or why that location, like what is that, what's important of that in your life and your grief. I think that's just a fascinating new way of really talking about the subject because it's very unique things that you wouldn't normally get out in a group setting or just asking them about their grief. Like it's really something, there's a lot of memories incorporated within that, which is, I love to see and I love to be able to utilize that. So as of right now, we haven't actually looked at it in research if it helps people dream more of the deceased or not. I've had people sort of say that it, you know, that they were able to dream something, but not the exact dream that they sort of wrote down. Other people know. So I think it's for me, it's more of a tool to be able to talk about the subject in more ways than just having the dream itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds like, surprisingly, it's become an important tool for you to use in those settings. So that's amazing. Do you have any final advice, recommendations, stuff you want to add?
Well, I think it's important to know that it's very common to have these dreams. And that was like one of the big things is that some people, well, our culture itself, I think, feels that it's not common because we don't talk about it more and more people aren't bringing it up. And so when I first was doing my MA and also PhD, I was looking for different support from different organizations who have the bereaved. A lot of people were saying that it wasn't meaningful. Like no one's asking for this information. And so I found that was really fascinating. And so when we actually did the research, we found that after spousal loss within the first 12 and 24 months, 86% of the people had at least one dream of the deceased. And after pet loss within the first 6 months, 78% had a dream of the deceased pet. And then after miscarriage, 57% of people had one. And so I think it's very important to know that most people will have one at some point within their journey with grief. And some will take longer to get. Like some people said it took a year, 2 years before they got their first one. Other times people have a lot of frequent dreams about that. And so there's still a lot of information we need to understand on like the frequency. We know dreams is a part of it, general dream recall, but there's a lot more for that. But it is common. And you'll see it also in pop culture a lot on how often they incorporate these dreams within their scripts. And they're not doing it because someone told them to. They're doing it probably because they've had their own experience with these dreams themselves that have been powerful or very negative in nature. So I think that's very important for people to just normalize and increase the grief literacy that they hold true to themselves. And also if they're teaching it, that this is something we should ask about and it's common. And the moment we think it's uncommon that something's wrong with us is we're just complicating our grief. And the other part I would add to this too, is that because it's so common, and imagery is so diverse, don't interpret people's dreams for them. And so really sit with them and just ask them what they feel it means, because everyone's culture is going to bring in different kind of interpretations and different symbols to the dreams. Different religions will have different understandings. And even within, I've learned this, even within religions, people have vastly different understandings of dreams. So just in general, so like I remember I was talking to some pastors before, and some pastors said that these dreams were the work of the devil, and that any dream with the deceased is actually the devil in disguise. Other pastors said, no, like God can utilize these dreams to help people. And other people said they don't know what it is. And so there's a lot of misunderstanding, and I think it's a lack of understanding of the research per se, to give them a really good idea of what these dreams can be within the grieving journey. But I think anytime we put those or people are being bombarded by disinformation, it's always great to just sit back and sort of ask what their thoughts are on it, rather than jumping in and try to say, this is what it means. Because that's actually one of the things I've heard, is that if a spiritual person tells, let's say, a non-spiritual person, and they say, oh, it's just, you know, it's your mind dealing with grief, they may not want to share that dream again because it's so special to them and they honor it. Other times, let's say someone has a dream and they tell someone, let's say who's maybe an atheist, they tell someone who's spiritual and they say, oh, that's your whatever, you know, deceased spouse, you know, wanting to visit you. And they're like, well, I don't believe that. And so they're like, I'm not going to share that again, because they don't want that spirituality basically placed on top of it. And so I think it's just being aware that atheists and people who are spiritual are having these experiences like this. So it doesn't, you don't need to go that route. It's to really just ask them how they feel with that dream, and if they have any questions. And you can always point them my way to understand more about the literature on the topic if they have any more questions on it. But I think it's just honoring that. And I think it's finding a way to just sit with people with what they experience, because I think that's the most important thing through all of this that I've been learning.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is, you know, your website itself and your podcast, all of that information is so wonderful because, I mean, there just isn't, like you say, there isn't a lot out there. And just that little bit of information you just gave about people sharing their dreams and being able to make their own interpretations, I think is really important. And also you mentioning about the culture. I remember looking on your Instagram, and I think there's a lot of posts there about, you know, different TV shows and things that have, I looked at The Big Bang Theory, I think, and there was one about the song Let It Be and how that's, you know, a dream from his mother. I never realized that.
Yes, I didn't know. So you don't really know until you're like in the field and you see this stuff come up. But yeah, Paul McCartney, his most favorite, one of his most famous songs, Let It Be, was based on a dream he had. It was his mom telling him to basically calm down and just let it be. Like, he was going through a difficult time of that life, and he woke up and he started to make that music for that. And the interesting thing is, I always thought it was a religious Mother Mary, but his mother is named Mary. And so it was actually a tie to his mother, not the Virgin Mary. And so it's just, you start seeing how like people will incorporate this stuff within their own creative, I guess, moments in life. And that's beautiful, but they're powerful. Like, they're putting it in because it was meaningful in some way. Even the negative ones can be very meaningful, or even scary, but they're a part of someone's life story and their journey. And so they want to incorporate them in different ways. And so there's a lot, even with the children, there's a couple of children's movies that have it in there too, and songs. And so I think it's just, you know, if we have kids too, it's just understanding that they're going to be dreaming of the deceased also. So it's just like making that part of the conversation as you move forward and expect it almost.
Yeah. So tell everybody, I'll make sure I have a link, but tell everybody anyway where they can find you.
Okay, so they can go to griefdreams.ca, and there's a lot of information on there with common questions answered, and said there's a link to the Grief Dreams podcast and Instagram page and everything like that. And so that's probably the easiest way to find me. If you have any questions, feel free to email me on the topic.
Excellent. Well, thank you again for taking the time today. This has been absolutely fascinating.
Well, thank you for having me. I said, I always appreciate people who take this topic seriously and want to expand the knowledge in this area. So I'm very grateful to be here.
Well, thanks again, and bye for now, everybody. Thank you for joining us in this episode of the Awaken Your Soul's Journey podcast. We hope that you have found solace, understanding, and inspiration as we explored the information and wisdom that will help you move forward on your own journey. I want to express my deepest gratitude to my special guests, experts, and you, the listener. Thank you for sharing your stories and wisdom. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for future episodes, please reach out. Make sure you hit like and subscribe. The Awaken Your Soul's Journey community is here to support you. Sign up for my newsletter at www.healingenergy.world or check out the links in the description below. Until we meet again, may you find peace, healing, and transformation on your own unique path. Sending you lots of love. Bye for now.